Welcome to the program Old Testament Prophets with Father Mitch Pacwa.
The peace of God be with you all. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest and a professor of Old Testament at Loyola University in Chicago. And in this series of the prophets, we're going to look at the book of Hosea today. We're going to start with this book and continue to investigate this prophet. Now, you'll find the book of Hosea immediately after the book of Daniel. Hosea is the first of what we call the minor prophets, at least first in the books. He's actually not the first one to appear, he's the second. He appears soon after Amos. Now, in terms of historical background for Hosea, I'm here to tell you that we just don't know a whole heck of a lot. There's not much to know. We see, if you open up to Hosea chapter 1, verse 1, that he was the son of Ba'eri, and that's what you know his dad's name. He was a prophet in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. Well, as we've said before, Uzziah and Jeroboam were kings about the same period, from the 780s, late 780s, into the 740s. And they died just a couple years apart. But he goes on to say that he was a prophet also under the son of Uzziah, Jotham and Ahaz. And we'll see Ahaz, especially in the prophecies of Isaiah. And Hezekiah, also in the prophecies of Isaiah. And Hezekiah continued to be king all the way into the 600s. So it seems that Hosea is prophesying at the earliest in the 750s, and more likely in the early 740s. And perhaps he continues to be a prophet for the next 40 years, according to this, what we call superscription, that is, the first verse giving us the background. Other than that bit of data, saying that he's a prophet for these years, we don't know anything about this man. So, we'll take a look at the text and see what we can learn about his message to us. Open up now to chapter 1, verse 2. Now, it says here, when Yahweh spoke at first with Hosea, Yahweh said to Hosea, "Go, take unto yourself a wife of harlotry, and children of harlotry, for the land does commit great harlotry, departing from Yahweh." Now, this is a strange, strange command. Yahweh is going to tell him to take a wife of harlotry, a wife of prostitutions. As a matter of fact, one of the great rabbinic commentators, Ibn Ezra, says that this is only a symbol. Hosea really didn't do that. How would God ever tell him to go take such a woman? Okay. I disagree, though, with Rabbi Ibn Ezra. I believe he literally took this word of the Lord to take a wife of prostitutions and children of prostitutions to be his own. And the reason I would say that is because Hosea speaks with such intensity. He speaks with such passion that he sounds to me like a man who really felt the hurt of having such a woman. Now, what do we mean about, though, and what did Hosea mean, by wife of prostitutions? Does it mean that she was herself a prostitute? Not necessarily. There's a word for prostitute. And he could have used that, but he doesn't use that word. So the number of possibilities. Either, women were taken to the temples of Baal, And the priests of Baal would have sexual relations with these women while they were still virgins, before they got married. And that was the kind of prostitutions that was meant. Cultic or ritual prostitution. That's one possibility. Another possibility is that she's simply one of the people of Israel who, as a whole people, has committed prostitution against Yahweh. In either case, this woman symbolizes the people of Israel and presents for us, you know, a very risque kind of theology, but one that is going to affect the Bible from the time of Hosea all the way into the time of St. Paul, and even in the book of Revelation. So let's see what he says here. So he went, and he took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim. So this Gomer is not some, you know, marine private. Gomer is a woman. And she's the Bat Diblaim, the daughter of Diblaim, which means raisin cakes, one of the favorite items of food in the fertility cult. And after he took this Gomer, the son of Mr. Raisin Cake, she conceived and bore Hosea a son. And Yahweh said to him, call his name Jezreel. Now, very typically, people like to name their children after themselves or after some relative. I was named by my grandmother after my father. Dad wanted me to be named something else, but my grandmother said, you know, name him Mitchell. But here, Yahweh is taking away that prerogative because ultimately Yahweh is the one who, you know, gives names and gives birth to people. And so he said, call his name Jezreel, for in a little while I will visit the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu and will cause the kingdom of Israel to cease. Now, Jezreel, first of all, means God sows or God inseminates. All right? Yezra means to sow seed in the ground, and El means God. And this was the name of one of the most fertile valleys in Israel. And it still is an extremely fertile valley. You can go there and it's green and all kinds of crops grow there. And so it makes sense to call it the insemination of the sowing of God. But in this valley, Jehu was a general of the northern kingdom. And Jehu was anointed by a son of the prophet, a prophet sent by the prophet Elisha to start a revolution against the northern kingdom. And Jehu killed lots of people. He wiped out the whole family of Ahab. And he set up his own dynasty. But his dynasty was no better than the dynasty of Omri and Ahab. He was just as much a sinner. And so, because of all that bloodshed and going overboard to excess and killing all these people, he is to be punished. And the son of Hosea and Gomer is to be named Jezreel as a sign of that punishment. We're taking a look at the prophet Hosea and open up to chapter 1, where we've seen that Hosea was told to take a wife of prostitutions, a woman named Gomer. And she has one son named Jezreel, named after the bloody revolution of Jehu, which took place in the valley of Jezreel. And how Yahweh even says that it shall come to pass on that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel, that Yahweh will bring military defeat upon Israel in the valley of Jezreel. And after this son, this firstborn son, is born, Gomer conceived again and bore a daughter. And Yahweh said to Hosea, call her name Lo Ruchamah, that is, not pitied. But it's not just pity, like say, oh, poor pitiful little thing. No, it's not that kind of pity. Ruchamah is a Hebrew word that comes from the word for womb, rechem. And it means to be womb-like. And to belong to the family, to be part of the family. Okay? That's one of the sense of pity. And you say, call her Lo Ruchamah, not pitied. not part of the family, not belonging here anymore. For I will no more have compassion upon the house of Israel, that I will in any ways pardon them. So this girl's name is going to be weird the rest of her life, because Yahweh will not have compassion. He will not make Israel part of his family anymore. But then he adds a little note, but I will have compassion upon the house of Judah, and will save them by Yahweh their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, nor by horses, nor by horsemen. So, we see that Judah is going to be saved. And as a matter of fact, we'll see that in the crisis of the 8th century B.C., the northern kingdom is destroyed by the Assyrians and wiped out. But the Judahites are saved. Now, verse 8. Now, when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bore a son. Now, weaning took place after about 2-3 years. They would nurse babies for 2-3 years. And then after she had done that, she conceived and had a son. And God said to Hosea, call his name Lo-Ami, for you are not my people. Now, Lo-Ami means not my people. Again, a pretty weird name. Yahweh is not into giving nice names like John and Jane and Mary and all that. No, weird names. Even by Jewish standards, ancient Hebrew standards, these are weird names. But this is another way to get across that Israel will not be my people. And remember what God had said when he gave them the Ten Commandments? You will be my people and I will be your God. Now he says, you are not my people. God rejects them for the sin. Now let's see what all of this means. If we take a look at chapter 2, we see that he goes on with these oracles. Now, the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered. And it shall come to pass that, instead of that which was said unto them, you are not my people, it shall be said to them, you are the children of the living God. Now here, we see a reversal. In the first time that Hosea was addressed as prophet and told to live out a symbolic life, his children and his wife are to be symbols, he was told that his children mean Israel is not his people. The children of Hosea become a symbol of the children of Israel. And his wife Gomer is a symbol of the land of Israel. And now this people was told through the children that Israel is not the people of God. But here in chapter 2, God changes his mind. And this is going to be a key part of the message of Hosea. That even though once they were called not my people, eventually the Lord will make them as numerous as the sands of the sea, and that they shall again be my people. It shall be said to them, you all are the children of the living God. And the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together, and they shall appoint themselves one head, and they shall go out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. So there's going to be 2 days then of Jezreel. One day of Jezreel will be a day of punishment, a day of breaking the bow, a day of military defeat. But even beyond that, there's a hope. A hope that it will be a day in which the people of Israel and the people of Judah will be joined together under one head, namely the family of David. So say unto your brothers, Ami, that is, my people, and to your sisters, Ruhama, that is, compassion, belonging to the family. That this will be a day of judgment and a day of salvation. Now, this becomes a model then. These children become a model, a symbol of the final day of God's judgment. For those who sin and for those who do not follow the true God, that day will be a day of defeat and destruction. But for those who repent, they will again enter into the covenant and be my people, that is the people of God. And they will again be compassion. They will belong to the family. Now we see one of the more passionate parts of this prophecy, where it says, plead with your mother. Plead. But the word that we see here, plead, is ruivu. Ruivu ve'imachem. That is, bring your mother into contention. Put her on trial. Tell her to come here and talk about this problem and put her on trial as in a covenant lawsuit. Now, we talked about covenant lawsuit in other prophets, where they would bring about a lawsuit against Israel for breaking the covenant. And now, we see that the children are being told by their father, Hosea, tell your mother to come to a covenant lawsuit. Tell your mother to come to be put on trial. And in that way, deal with the covenant that she broke between me, her husband, and herself, through all her prostitutions. For she is not my wife, neither am I her husband. Let her put away all of her harlotries from her face, and her adulteries from between her breasts. So, here, Hosea accuses his wife of adultery and unfaithfulness, and accuses her of that to the children. An incredible accusation. And is very graphically portrayed. And tells the children to tell the mother, stop being an adulteress, because I'm not your husband. We're looking at Hosea, chapter 2, and the pain and suffering that Hosea experienced in his marriage. And while chapter 2 begins with a word of hope, it seems kind of out of place, because immediately after the word of hope in the first three verses, we return in verse 4 to a covenant lawsuit against his wife, where he accuses her again of adulteries. Now, let's see the accusation. Take away her adulteries from between her breasts, or else, as we see in verse 5, I will strip her naked. I will expose her physically and shame her by that. Nudity and nakedness was one of the great shames of the Israelite people. And I will set her forth, I will put her out there as in the day she was born. And I will make her like a wilderness and set her like a dry land and slay her with thirst. Now, we see that there's a back and forth here. On one hand, Hosea seems to be talking about his wife, but then he's also talking about the land of Israel. Because the land of Israel will be set naked as on the day of her birth. That is, for a land to be naked means to be all rocks, all dirt, all sand. Not clothed with the beauty of green trees and grass. No flowers to decorate her. No wheat, no olive trees, no grapevines. None of that will be there. But instead, just gray, dark rocks. He goes on to say to the land, and I will not have compassion upon her children, for they are the children of harlotry. The reason for the lack of compassion is that the Lord is hurt by this unfaithfulness of his people. The mother has played the harlot. She that conceived them has done shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers that gave me my bread, my water, my wool, my flax, my wine, and my drink. So here, the wife is saying, my husband didn't do much for me. Yahweh, the God of my fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he didn't really do anything for me. It was really my lovers. They gave me my grain, my oil, my wine, my flax, my clothing, my jewels, all the good stuff I have. Now, by lovers, what the prophet means here are the gods Baal and Asherah and the other gods of the other peoples. Gods that the Israelites were attracted to. Gods of fertility. Gods of grain, wine, and oil. Gods who promised to rain oil from the heavens, like Baal. And Israel preferred to go after those gods like a woman chasing after lovers that look more romantic, more beautiful, more handsome, better dancers, and so on. The Lord answers there in verse 8, therefore, I will hedge up your way with thorns, and I will make a wall against her that she shall not find her paths. In other words, she wants to go running away after other lovers. So Yahweh will put a hedge of thorns in the pathway so she can't run so far away. And he'll put a wall on the other side so that she can't get over it. And that she won't be able to find her way to the other lovers. She won't be able to go to foreign countries and worship their gods and goddesses. And she shall run after her lovers. She'll go running after these gods. But she shall not overtake them. She shall seek them, but she shall not find them. And she shall say, I will go and return to my first husband. Notice the reverse here of what Jesus says. Remember how Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. Ask and you shall receive. That's the true way to seek God. To seek Jesus. To knock on His door. To let Him knock on the door of your heart. But here, these people seek these other gods and goddesses, and Yahweh says they won't find. They shall seek, but not find. They shall pursue, but not overtake. And so in frustration, when it doesn't go so well for her to find these other gods and goddesses, then Israel will say, I will go and return to my first husband, Yahweh. For then it was better with me than now. It's worse to be chasing after these other men. Adultery is no fun and games. So I'll go back to my first husband. And then in verse 10, it's like a word of compassion. For she did not know that it was I that gave her the grain, the wine, and the oil. And I multiplied for her the silver and gold, which they used for Baal. Now I gave them all this stuff, not Baal. And they accredited Baal with all this. How unfaithful. But it's the same kind of thing that Jesus says on the cross. Our ignorance is our hope. Because Jesus says on the cross, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And here the prophet Hosea is similar. When he says, for she did not know that it was I who gave her these things. She didn't realize how bad off she was, what a bad sinner she was. So he says in verse 11, therefore, I will take back my corn in its time and my wine in its season, and I'll snatch away my wool and my flax, given to cover her nakedness. And now I will uncover her nakedness and shame in front of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand. None of these gods are going to save her when I send famine, when I send no more wine, no more grain, no more oil, no more clothes. I will cause her mirth, her happiness to cease. Her feasts, her new moons, her Sabbaths, and all the appointed seasons, they'll all cease. I will lay waste her vines and her fig trees. And whereof she said, these are my hire. My lovers gave this to me. Like men give women money when they go to a prostitute. And I, Yahweh, will make them into a forest. And the beasts of the field shall eat of them. We see the same image in the Psalm, Psalm 80. And I'll visit upon her the days of the Baalim. Now the word visit again does not mean paying a social call. This kind of visit means you just wait until your father comes home. Or in this case, you wait till your husband comes home and finds this adultery. I will visit in the sense of punish all the days of the Baalim, the days of the Baals, of these false gods, when she offered up to them. And she decked herself out in jewels and went after her lovers and forgot me. And then, after that, after I've punished her and she knows how weak and vulnerable she is, he says in verse 16, then I will allure her. And the word allure also means to entice. I will almost, sometimes it even means seduce. I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. I will love her again. After I've punished her, I will let her know my love. I will let her come and see how tenderly I care for her. That's what I really want, to let you know after punishment my tender love for you. Let us receive that tender love of God and His mercy and forgiveness. God bless you.
Yeah. Teach us, good Lord, to serve you as you deserve, to give and not to count the costs, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labor and not ask for any reward, save that of knowing that we do your will.